Well, welcome to Hemp Barons, Jay. It's wonderful to have you with us today.
It's such a pleasure to be here with you, Joy. It's great.
You are one of the more humble rock stars of hemp, so you will please forgive me while I have to tell the listeners that you're a personal hero of mine, Jay Noller, a professor of landscape podology, obviously with research involving the disciplines of soil science, geomorphology, art, and archaeology. You come from early in all of this, the late 80s, early 90s, from Colorado State University. You are a soil artist, but have also spent 20 years at OSU as head of the Department of Crop and Soil Science. Well, for the last five of that, your career has spanned quite long at OSU, and you stepped down from that position in January of 2019 to become the director and lead researcher for OSU, Oregon State University's Global Hemp Innovation Center. Your experience is quite international. Including 35 large projects spanning much of North and South America, Southern Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. We know you've published more than 180 papers and maps, six books, and you continually contribute to other works. You're doing also tremendous work as an advisor to the National Industrial Hemp Council. And slowly, as I like to say, making your way around the planet like some stealth hemp ninja, Jay. So just welcome to the show. Please tell us first how you came to hemp. When did cannabis in any of its forms, and particularly hemp, come into your field of awareness?
Well, we'll start with my professional life. I think that's a good place to start. That would have been in 2014. Actually, before that, it was 2012 when the Oregon delegation, federal delegation, was putting touches on the 2013 Farm Bill, which was stalled and came out the following year. And so in that, we had a heads up that this was coming, and we were looking at, with Senator Merkley and Senator Wyden, who were two of the four who certainly moved that, the 2014 Farm Bill forward, along with Paul and McConnell out of Kentucky. So in that, just looking at, so what should this be described as, whatever. So that'd be 2012, really. And of course, our department had, we had an earlier research effort in 1994 to 1997. One of two locations, actually, that did industrial hemp research for the USDA. That was an earlier form of what was supposed to happen in 2014. And of course, what would have been called, had we had the formal setup for the Agricultural Research Service of the USDA today, back in the old days from 1880 to 1932, 33, somewhere in there, was the National Hemp research facility was here on our campus. So for 50 years,
wow.
Over 50 years. So hemp's been here for a long time, and it's been important. Of course, 1970, it was expunged. We had greenhouses with it and other things. And that was, so there were other experiments going on, but not at it was federally okay, but in 1970, it was all expunged, wiped away. So when I became department head in 2014, just before the Farm Bill passed, I picked it up and carried it, and that's just taken over my life. Now it's all the time. Has been for several years now, so. And then administration. Yeah. Yep.
Once it gets into you, it's in you, and you can't get it out.
Yep.
I'm thankful every day for this flyer I received in the spring of 1990 at a Grateful Dead show, that it just changed my life on a cellular level. Fascinating. I did not realize. Now I knew that Oregon, of course, obviously was taking a lead, clearly, as we talk about Congressman Blumenauer, or we talk about Senator Wyden, Senator Merkley, and of course, my own mentor, who you know so well, Andrea Herman, who taught that first course at OSU in recent history. I guess I'll have to call it post-prohibition in a way. And so I know how important Oregon is to this. I did not know, however, about the research that went on between 94 and 97. And it's, you know, this East Coast, West Coast relationship that's fascinating to me, because it was in 96 that Vermont passed its inaugural hemp bill for research, research for books, not research with planting seeds. And I had actually moved my, at the time, two young sons, both working their way through masters now, to Burlington to serve as the secretary of the Vermont Hemp Council. I didn't realize that Oregon was already, you know, quasi knee deep in it, nor did I realize this 50-year research center. And so when you say it was expunged in 1970, obviously you're referring to the Controlled Substances Act, pulling a rug out from under that research. This is a very enlightening to me. I did not realize this deep history in Oregon, that you, a legacy really, that you are right now just holding the mantle and running with it, Jay.
Yep, that's what it is. Shoulders I'm standing on.
Oh, shoulders you're standing on, brother, and we're standing on yours. When did the idea come about to start the Global Hemp Innovation Center? Clearly, that was an investment and a very concerted, deliberate decision that I know with public institutions went through a million different levels. How did that subject, or how did that decision come to be?
Well, I think it was that I had the role of department head, and it was a large department. When you look at everybody that I had some administrative oversight, 32 locations around Oregon, almost 600 people. So it was about, you know, like I think our department, even though it's within a college, was the fourth largest college, so to speak, at Oregon State. So there's a lot of administration and such. But I also saw that we had to move hemp along, and budgets are such you can't just hire people and, you know, go do hemp. I found that the easiest thing was, well, just do it and eventually create some space, right? Thankfully, the DEA, I got registration applied in December of 2014, and then was able to get it in 2015, and things weren't happening that I was going to get seeds, and it wasn't. And I was already doing research over in Europe. That was kind of my gig for the last like 25 years, was working over there. And a lot of it's been looking at the roots of agriculture. Like, how did we figure this out? So a lot of archaeology and Greece, Cyprus, Turkey, Syria, Italy, etc. So I was at one of my archaeological digs in southern Italy, and thought, you know, there's got to be a home someplace. And of course, Italy did at that time. And so I was meeting with some of those folks, but they were all the way at the other end of the country. And after meeting up with them, they said, oh, you know, you need to go over, why don't you go over to Eastern Europe? And I thought, well, I'm kind of there. So then I just dropped in Serbia, and it's been a match. So we just started working together. 2015, that just continues. I have a grad student there right now. So she's fortunately able to keep doing her field work and lab work and such. So it's been a good partnership. And of course, that's branched out to nearby countries. So most of the southern tier of European countries we work with. And then it's 2018 when I started working in China. And so, you know, news has come out lately of some cultivars that it helped introduce in 2018. And so they're slowly following my plan to get forward. And so that's So I have to say, like, how did hemp happen? It's just like it's now become everything. And, you know, so last year, I think I flew around the world, I think, 5 times. I was in China every month, Europe every month, just because you got to keep the projects going. And so that just, it was like, I can't be department head anymore. My faculty have no idea who I am. I'm not at home. And it's like, you're always around the globe. And it's just like, well, okay, why don't you just, you know, we're innovating. It's global. It's hemp. And this is sort of the naval, and you can't use naval. So you have, you know, because you look at that. But let's call it a center. So it's Global Hemp Innovation Center.
Yeah. And essentially what you've created, you with obviously support from OSU, is the nation's largest center of its kind, 40 faculty, and I'm sure that's growing.
We're north of 60 now, I think.
North of 60, wow. At least 19 different academic disciplines engaged in research, teaching, and extension services. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so, just incredible.
Business, pharmacy, veterinary, all the ag, everything in ag you would think about. Of course, engineering, forestry, really into it. Economics, art, of course, you know.
Chemistry, thing, nanotechnology, any nanotechnology in there?
Yeah, the engineering and all.
WSC, that's what it is at OSU, right? Wood Science and Engineering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the course.
And let me ask you this. A lot of folks, they think of hemp these days. The average, at least American consumer, is thinking CBD. I, after all of these decades, you say hemp, and I still think oilseed and fiber. But as we know, extracts and cannabinoids these days do tend to take up, as I like to say, all the air in the room. And I'm also grateful for them because, you know, folks that we could get interested in all that hemp is and can be and can do and all of the benefits of hemp in terms of even adding them into your products, not to mention with proper employment of regenerative agricultural practices, its potential for healing the soil and the biosphere. While we can get people engaged in that, when they have a sleep problem or they have a shoulder pain or a knee pain that's been bugging them for 10 years or 10 months or 10 days and that problem is resolved for them, now all of a sudden they're listening. So very grateful for CBD and extracts to bring all of this awareness. I didn't see it coming. The plant's always surprising us, as you well know, but I didn't see it coming 20 years ago, and then it hit us all like a ton of bricks 6 years ago, and now I embrace it all because this is how we're getting folks to us. But where is your heart song in hemp, Jay Noller? We've got extracts, we've got hemp fiber, we've got hemp grain, oil seed for obviously that nutritional dense profile for human and animals, and certainly an amazing industrial purposes. Where is your heart song in all of this?
Well, for me, it's a lot or all of it. And I know that's like, what is your specialty? You got to specialize. And it's like, no, I'm not an autodidact polymath. I made it to full professors for my art. So, you know, and I'm in the science side of things. So also professor of soil science. So that's... when I look at it, certainly when, as a, you know, department head, I had a very diverse, huge department touched all the way across all of the, research, but also a lot of the compliance side of agriculture, for the state of Oregon. And so you just look at that system, and I was administrator for the, Western wheat program. So that's minister for the annual meeting and occasional meetings and reports and such like that to the U.S. government on all the bakeries, all the flour mills, all the wheat fields, all the research and everything for the whole Western U.S. And so, and then similar for all the northern Northwest states for potatoes. We can talk about the man tops. I mean, there's a lot of different crops that I was already administering. It was like, I just looked at this and said, okay, so there's, this is a vacuum. Hemp is going to be a commodity. It has to fit all of these. These are the processes. They're already there. They're wheels. We just need to paint hemp on the wheels and put them on the car and go. So that's what I see. That's what my role has been. But also, like, why are you going all over the world? It's like, well, because A, our federal government was very much against it for a long time, even though we had permission to do it. They just were, you know, trying to obscure, mess with our research efforts all the time. And I was just like, okay, it's safer. Just work someplace where they don't care. And but then that's fiber hemp in China or some grain hemp there. And then in Europe, it was grain and fiber. And here in the U.S., in Oregon, I could go out, see what local growers were doing so I could, you know, observe. But to actually bring it onto campus, that was tough the first, 3 years, actually, until finally we could bring it on. And now we really bring it on. It's really going. But those foreign relationships then gave me entree to government leaders. You know, I report to prime ministers, kings of different countries now, 20 some odd countries that I advise. And so that's, you know, I think my hemp instructional videos in China now are passing 2 billion views.
Oh, just think my about that. God! Are you kidding me?
No. So, you know, so I can get on an airplane in China and people just like, they know my name. And I was like, I have no idea who they are. So it's just that kind of crazy stuff. So, and it's all hemp, right? But because we work with these different governments, have good appreciation of how their processes work. And so that, so work with our government and these other governments to get trade going. And so that's been a big focus, certainly during this COVID time. It's just, we need markets around the world. And I think, you know, next year is going to be a very, very good year. So
when I say stealth ninja, boy, I mean unbelievable, Jay, or very believable as the case is. And that is, not only are we so blessed to have you in hemp in the United States, but the planet, the globe, you have been cross-pollinating, as it were, throughout the globe, really, around the world, and are obviously getting these other countries have an interest in it, and you inspire them. You are really what I like to say, connecting these light encoded filaments. If there was an auric shell or template of the planet, man, are you connecting it together with this incredible plant to deliver on its promise. And may I ask you, I'd love, because your perspective is just so valuable, and I'd love for the listeners to get just a little high level snapshot of what's going on around the world, sort of who's ahead and what. With China, obviously they are the kings and queens of textiles, hemp textiles, having figured out a way to degum or delineate the plant, I think 1987 post-prohibition. But where do you see China? What are they really great at and sort of ahead in hemp-wise?
Yeah, hemp-wise. Of course, fiber, and that's going to be that way for a while, not for a very long time, because you know, there's, if we look at what people wear globally and what people put on, it's still a petroleum-based thread, right? So, and that's really, as some people would say, the king of the hill in terms of, you know, product. And then there's cotton, and, you know, we see that there's going to be somehow hemp is going to displace it, but it's, it may not be the natural form that you would think, because if you're going to look at really being having impact, there's a bigger partner to displace, and that's petroleum oil. And so then that gets around to, you know, grain hemp. And then there's also, there's some really novel parts of a hemp plant that haven't been bred We just see across the U.S. right now, there's one model like 99%, 98%. And it's just a scaled up grandma's basement, marijuana grow. And it hasn't, that's been tried to scale. And it's like, no. There are other ways to do this. They can get other products from. And, we'll see that over time. And that's coming. So really, when you look at what's China going to be good at, they'll be able to do enough to generate some yuan or RMB, that is dollars, to bring into their economy. And that's, so will be what seems to be what's going to make the greatest margin. So, but that's, CBD is still a ways away. I see people talking about, oh, China's just swamping us. And it's like, you know what? I think I've walked through every single one of their factories. And it's like, just chill, people. Just totally chill. I don't know. You're making up stuff. That's actually your neighbor down the road. And that's why it's bad, because they don't know what they're doing. And they're in the U.S. And so that's, I think, projecting onto some other group that they don't know how to do it is really is probably you or somebody nearby. Look there first. They're not going to be there for a while. And if they do, they have a huge demand just for cosmetics, and that's where it's going to go in. That's where it's allowed. That's where the government has created the legal framework to move it. And they're almost 2 years away from where that starts to really kind of scale up. And then some of it may come across the Pacific, but that was accidental. That's not by really any purpose. Other than somebody making a trade, but they had no touch with hemp. It's just they see a margin and they're going to move it. And that's going to be true for most of the Asian countries, large middle class. And so cosmetics is a big part of the business. And so that's when I look at what folks are doing here in the U.S. It's like, okay, you got isolate, nice, or you have crude or whatever. But your market isn't that far away. At least you get to a harbor and then the ship takes it. And that's things will go. So they'll get there somewhat, but even like corn, soybeans, all the agricultural products, they have to import. The Belt and Road system is set up so they can bring in, so they can grow their needed resources and bring them into the country. So it's going to be whatever's favorable for tariffs, et cetera. I wouldn't worry about they weren't really worry about any other country.
I don't ask for worrying at all. I love hemp. I have no judgment to this whole thing. I am very clear that we are headed for healing. It may or may not happen in my lifetime, but there's no fear, no worrying. There's no vibration from that at me. I want to know. I'm super happy that wherever hemp is making headway, that just makes me happy. So awesome on China and fiber and not being a threat. So, there's crazy stuff happening in Asia, as we well know. There's really only Japan, which will take that extract from the mature stocks, sterilized seeds, get us all the hemp extract you can out of that fiber and those sterilized seeds. It's a difficult market. What about Europe? Now, Europe is big and you've got that great perspective. Maybe if you could sort of divide it up a little bit for the different parts of Europe in terms of what you see progress infrastructure-wise being made there.
Right. So Europe is an interesting case. It's kind of like the U.S. If we look at, because it's very much, it's a federation of states, right? Nation states.
Member states.
Yep. And so when you look at, any of the hemp products and such, you'll find that some states don't want certain things of certain composition. That is, it's got to be at 0 or 0.1, 0.2. They finally got to 0.2 last month, right?
So 0.3. They finally got to 0.3 last month. It's France is the holdout for 2.2.
Yeah. I know it's allowed to 0.3, but that's still, if we're looking at something that is labeled for all of them, it's 0.2. Mm-hmm. So if you're making a product, you better be at 0.2 or below. So,
with that extract in particular, that's where the underscore comes in there, it seems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, each country can have its own more strict or not less strict rules. Although they do get to define certain things that they've been doing it for a while, and they can demonstrate they've been doing it for a while. So, you'll see that it's all over the place. I think if looking at the latest map in terms of the different categories of countries, what is it? It's almost a dozen different categories. So that means, you know, it's not one size fits all. It's kind of like the states, you know, here. Oregon's very, very permissible, whereas Idaho, no way, there's nothing. So, and then you have things in between.
And then there's things like, though, just Dunagro and hemp flax obviously come to mind, Germany, Holland. And we know there are certain things going on in Lithuania, Ukraine, fiber. There is certainly some extraction going on, but anything that you could sort of tell us there, again, just around infrastructure and the different types? Or have I basically, have the two of us already explained that from a high level at this point?
Well, I mean, let's look at France, right? There's only two licenses for CBD or, you know, cannabinoid extract. That's it. Dos. Deux. Two. Okay. So you have a lot of people say, I can do it, blah, blah. It's like, well, okay, let's look at it from the top down. So the top only thinks there's two. So maybe there are others, but, you know, you'll be found. And then you look at other countries where they want it all centralized. Others, it has to be planned in. They're still working on the plans. They're going to be working on plans for a while. That's just another way to say yes, but. So there's a lot of yes, but. Yes, you can, but it's going to be 5 years. But they're not going to tell you 5 years. But that's kind of in their bureaucratic head. And then there are those that are like, let's just go. I mean, I watched that. Italy over the last 2 years went from like, we're not going to look at it. We're not going to talk about it. No. Then it's like, okay, yeah, let's do that. Oh, the government changed. Oh, now, no. And now, like today, it's like, it's a narcotic. So it's like, but the EU just, you know, said in Brussels, and they're like, no.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
But that's today. So,
and so much, what a great analogy that it is so much like the patchwork, as I often refer to it, of developing law and regulation throughout our 50 states and territories. And it is so fascinating. I'm sure that it's just as much of the chalkboard, nails on a chalkboard for you as it is for me when we get to hear it's legal in all 50 states. And by the way, what the it is, you know, tell me what the it is first, and then we can have the argument based on that. Mm-hmm. But if it has to do with hemp in general, the word hemp, planting hemp, not legal in all 50 states. Extracting hemp, not legal in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. Extracting hemp for dietary supplements, not legal in all 50 states, not even kind of acknowledged at the federal level. But of course, we have some brave states that are allowing those products to be marketed as dietary supplements. It's a fascinating situation. And then, of course, Australia is, thank you, Paul Benham, is starting to come along. I think now you can finally, humans can actually consume hemp grain now in the country of Australia. It's a big deal.
But the leaves, the beef could eat, and then you could eat the beef. That went first.
Just, right?
It's just like, okay, sure.
Man, incredible stuff. And I I also want to make sure, and I think in terms of the international education and just the reach, right now you're working on a big conference in February, mm-hmm. February 9th and 10th, the National Hemp Symposium, nationalhempsymposium.org, and folks can certainly get your links at mjbulls.com to find out more. But that's with the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. Tell us about the scope of that conference.
Right. So this is really, I guess one way to put it is we're going to recast that one figure that was in the 1935 Popular Mechanics issue that said, hey, there are 25,000, you know, products, blah, 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 right? So
is that the billion dollar crop? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was, it just, that was 1938, brother. And that's what always amazes me, is it was a year after the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act. So here they are taxing and regulating hemp out of existence in 1937. And 1938, boom, Popular Mechanics, billion-dollar crop. So tell me, this is fascinating to me that you're using this as a springboard. So how does this fit in?
So we looked at the U.S. government considers its main sectors for its economy, for the U.S. economy. And so for each of those sectors, we have somebody from a C-suite of one of the major U.S. corporations is going to look in their crystal ball and say, how does hemp and how can and how should hemp fit in their particular sector? So like transportation, retail, of course, agriculture, but also we have government, fuel, bioenergy, it goes on and on. So as we look at each of those categories, you have a company that people would identify probably like in manufacturing, we have 3M, we'll be talking. And so they've got all sorts of things they're imagining and or actually doing, and that's up to them to disclose or not. Because right now we've been focused a lot on the essential oil hemp because we can extract terpenes and cannabinoids off of, and the pollen being shed by grain hemp is kept in certain quarters like North Dakota and Eastern Montana right now, and we'll see that. And Minnesota, it's in other states, but that's where we find the largest acres. And then fiber is coming around, of course. So we look at the number of hemp farmers in 2020 who claim to be growing hemp. It's Texas, right? So, but they all have to be growing it for some reason, right? And so this is giving folks an idea of what we need to do. And because it's the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, of course, we need to talk on those various topics. And so how do researchers, innovators think ahead? And so that's to get sort of be that reset, if you will, and let's look at the whole thing because there's a lot here and it can fit in across the economy. And the secret is out, and that is we actually have speakers who are going to say hemp fits across the entire U.S. economy. And so, we're looking through to 2050, and let's see.
This is more Stealth Ninja. This is exactly what we need. Hemp is the great blender, the great synthesizer. When we add, particularly as you well know from David Sieber, who can describe it in its simplest form, just in terms of how they developed Hemp Shield, that low VOC wooden deck stain, and realizing as he worked with Forest Paint there in Southern Oregon, as several several generation sealant and paint company, family company, that had knew how all of these different VOCs worked together, had seen it all before. But then they add some hemp seed oil into it, some special things had been done to that hemp seed oil, but in any event, to see things working better together in new and different ways that they had not seen, that they did not expect. And so it does it on that level. It does it as a, on the huge scale. So we're talking micro and macro. For us to be able to really deliver on the promise of the plant, we need for every industry, human and animal, body mm-hmm. care, nutrition, nutraceuticals, pharmaceuticals, paper, textiles, building materials, biocomposites, industrial sealants and coatings, 3M, as you say, adhesives and glues. Of course, and this brings me to the next subject, energy storage, fuel, batteries, all of it. And we need just folks to start understanding and using it and retrofitting, I guess I would say, or supplementing or augmenting that which is necessary of their existing processing and manufacturing and infrastructure to accommodate whatever is unique about hemp. Can we talk for a minute about supercapacitors, energy? And we're talking everything from a pellet that can be made from the herd, which is going to work just as well as a wood pellet and actually burn a little cleaner. Of course, your biodiesel from a hemp seed, but I don't see that as a very good or useful or optimal way to use that valuable seed, particularly given just inflated and false values on fuel in general. But when we get into this other forms of fuel and particularly supercapacitor and energy storage, then it starts to be a real game changer. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, certainly if we look at, you know, everybody looks at China and says, oh, it's hemp textiles. Look at that greatest stuff. And it's like, you know, that's only like, in terms of the weight of the plant, maybe 2%. Okay. What's happening to the other 98%, right? It's because it goes into defense, you know, armaments, all sorts of things like that. So we will have a speaker from Office of Navy Research talking about what the U.S. government and U.S. defense will be looking at in terms of hemp. And that'll be patterned off of other defense capabilities in other countries, right? So, and then we look at, of course, it's carbon, right? There's lots of sources of carbon. And so the beauty of a hemp plant is here you have through its genetics is able to configure carbon and associated elements in interesting forms that with enough, you know, not a lot of processing, have a degree of crystallinity and size and shape. I.e. capacitance, if you will, that we don't see in other materials. So yeah, it's pretty obvious. And if it's light, which it is, then the whole problem of a vehicle with its undercarriage of batteries currently in the lithium form is heavy. And that means it can only go so far because it has to carry itself, right? Because it's heavy. So if you take out that weight and now it's just the passenger and then the contents that you're carrying along and the weight of the vehicle, that's how we'll see the extended range of vehicles is because, well, look, you're not carrying heavy elements, i.e. the encasement of lithium, which is lighter than carbon, but you know, carbon does have weight. it's still it's going to be in a form that is expected to be quite substantial. So yeah, we'll see that. And so we'll have at least two of the speakers talking about what they see in their sectors and how that interacts. So expect it. In fact, demand it.
So exciting. I really think that that's a big one here for us. Graphene, graphite whiskers and carbon nanotubes, I understand, are basically the only two substances that on the nanoscale, hemp cellulose, the surface area and the strength is second only to those things. So it seems to me just a tremendous game changer for the air and space industry. Mm-hmm. And certainly, again, as we say, we'll think of light rails and monorails and modern futuristic transportation. I think it's going to change things dramatically. I know it is. I can't believe I'm still using words like think. It is changing things dramatically. And may I ask, and I love that the Department of Defense will be there. Obviously, Hemp for Victory, the Department mm-hmm. of Defense has a tremendous history there. Certainly Napoleon invaded Russia in 1812 to cut off the English Navy supply of hemp, and Japan invaded Manila, you know, in 1941, cutting off our supply of hemp as we were entering World War II. And Tulsi Gabbard, God bless her, on her way out, she did not run for re-election, but that Hemp for Victory Act that she filed, I don't take credit for a darn thing, but it's something that I'm very proud to have been at least helpful contributing to, because it really directs every single, to the extent, of course, that it would ever pass, but directs every single agency within the United States, which is the largest purchaser of goods in the world, and the Department of Defense, of course, being the largest purchaser among them, and directing them to say, hey, of all the stuff you buy, guys, what on earth can be made or blended with and from hemp, and do some research on it. So I just love that the Department of Defense is going to be there. They're listening. May I ask you, because you say, and this is as we close, and it's a United States issue right now. And of course, we've got all these interim final rules happening, right? The Drug Enforcement Administration, the United States Department of Agriculture, we've got the FDA supposedly working on a regulatory framework, although a great article from a hero of mine, Martin Lee, called Desperately Seeking Harm, diagnosing the FDA's CBD problem. So it seems like maybe they're working on why they shouldn't have to make one, instead of listening to Congress and the people and making one. But all of these rules, one of them is this idea of, at least there is certainly a growing and huge population of farmers and industry stakeholders here in the public who think that the definition of hemp, which caps the delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol concentration at 0.3%, needs to be increased, and that it should be increased to 1% because of all of this focus on extract, that being where the current, and yes, I'll say it, not probably here to stay, real main industry is in the United States. And there are many, many arguments, of course, for that. There are many, many arguments against it. And the European Industrial Hemp Association and others, certainly those who are more aware of the climatic impacts and the need for real environmental and economic sustainability for farmers, say, why are we doing that? Why are we not encouraging the entire use of the whole plant instead of getting farmers set up for these giant extract farms in the United States and having to change the law around that? What are your thoughts, to the extent you're willing to share them, about this movement to attempt to try to get that definition changed and that cap on the intoxicating property of cannabis, which is delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, get it increased for hemp?
Right. So when we look at, the 0.3, it's like, that's an arbitrary number. Well, yeah, it's an arbitrary number. One is an arbitrary number too. And so what really is the number that needs to be there, right? And so you'll have law enforcement say, well, we need to, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay. So we have unlimited alcohol supply, yet what we say is that in certain circumstances, when you are in a privileged state, that is, you're driving a motor vehicle on a public road, then a public safety officer determines from behavior, either before or for some other reason, because your tail lights out, which is always the great scam. And then they smell your breath, and now you do a sobriety test, right? And so so we don't have a 1% alcohol drink or a 0.3, right? We don't have a 100 proof. You can go higher proof, right? There are certain forms of alcohol that you are not allowed to sell for consumption, wood alcohol being one of them, and for good reason, because you drink that, you're dead. So it's where is the pressure point? Right now, we are pressuring biology, not the people who are using the biology. And so my sense is that, and we're probably getting very close there, if not this upcoming administration, but soon thereafter, is where we finally realize that, you know what, all that stuff, it's what purpose does that serve? More what is the person doing in the public space, and that's where a public safety officer has that role. So we think that the percent is not important. If we look at a number of countries, China's one of them, where it's like, so tell me, that seed, what are you going to do with that? I'm going to plant it. Uh-huh. And what's going to happen to it when it grows up? It's fiber. Oh, okay. No problem. They don't come out and test it. They don't do anything. You just tell them, this is my intent. It's a seed. It's my intent. This is where it's going. Grain, same thing. You're doing it for CBD. Oh, okay. Now, tell us, and then it gets, it now moves into that direction. And we're missing that in the U.S. because somebody who's growing the grain hemp is under the same restrictions as somebody growing something that's just always running just a little hot, right? And so I think the USDA recognizes that. This is, they're following what Congress says. And, Congress is worried. We have some states wherein you're looking at part of the economy is dependent on the enforcement of this particular number. And you change that number, and it's like, wait a second, our economy is going to suffer because that number isn't in the right place, which is disruptive, right? So to a certain tax. So to me, product specifications and intent of the material, because we're just now finally starting to get some U.S. government registered hemp varieties. In a few years, we'll be in a place where it's like, oh, you're growing that? Well, whatever. And then they will move to that. So the next, revision will address that. And the one after that will definitely be like, you're growing something that falls into this product specification. Just go. If you're over here in the extractive for cannabinoids and you're going to try to hew close to a number that goes into another product category, it's not that you're going to get, it's not a criminal act. It's that the market's going to say, you just went over the line. So now you're over in that. And there's a lot of people in that category. And so that's the market you move into. So then folks are going to pull back because they want to make a better profit. So I think product categories, specifications, APA's come out with theirs. So has 9, 10 other different groups, and those all have to be worked out. Although some of them are germane to a particular industry, which is, again, when we look at like our symposium, it's that when hemp finally grows up, this is how we'll look at it. This whole thing about, is it 0.3, is it 1, is it 7 or 10? It's just like, come on. It's is your market? What are the product specifications? Are you able to meet them? Because if you're not, they're not going to buy it, or you're going to get a much lower price for it. So I would think, you know, it's, you know, we're looking at just reinventing the world is to say, here's a product category, and if you go above that, you get a premium. If you're under the number, you don't. If you go over it, and then you just keep moving along like we do with every other commodity. And so the farmers are like, my soft winter wheat, is it at 9?
Yeah.
Because if I'm at 9.5, I'm not going to get the premium. I want to be at 9. You know, so they're not trying to push the number. They're growing in a certain region. They know after time that's where they're going to go, because it's going to go to an East Asian soft cake, sponge cake market. And that's a lot more profitable than, you know, some Midwest millery. So, yeah.
Absolutely, intended use is no doubt the way to go. And I know that this is a temporary, I often say, if folks thought that we were going to come from hysterical prohibition into some common sense right out of the gate law and regulation, that's just not how it works. Stamp your feet all you like and beg to get a cookie, but that's just not how it works. But boy, are things evolving ever so quickly. And while we are in this 0.3 type of, and as you say, still so many delicate areas of 0.2, but the European having gone into 0.3 recently, because of that, and that is where we are in this nascent stage of law and regulation, I think there are concerns that one country going way above, that it is going to cause problems with the world economy. And it's all of the reasons why we need to sort of just synchronize and get real about what THC is. Jay, it is such an honor to have you on the show. I really hope that we'll get to have you back again. We're just really touching the surface of the tremendous amount of information and knowledge and expertise that you have to share about this incredible, valuable, and versatile plant. But while we say goodbye for this time, is there anything that you want the listeners to know, a message about hemp, something important that you'd like to leave them with, other than make sure you register for the National Hemp Symposium on February 9th and 10th?
I think the key thing is that for hemp, expect the unexpected and question what seems not to be questionable.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for that. And someone needs to put that on a hemp t-shirt. Jay, wishing you so much good health and happiness in the next year. I cannot wait to continue to watch your lotus petals unfold, brother. And thank you for everything you do for this plant all around the world.
All right, Joy. Likewise.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, my name is Kira Reed, and I'd like to invite you to be inspired by the women who are leading in the cannabis industry. Each week, we will discuss empowerment, leadership, and what it means to be a woman in charge in marijuana, hemp, and CBD. As the founder of the Women Empowered in Cannabis community, I have had the great pleasure to get to know many brilliant and talented women who are CEOs, executives, politicians, advocates, and community leaders that are focused on creating a cannabis economy that is just, fair, and equal. We'll learn how these women make decisions, how they navigate a predominantly male industry, and what they're doing to level the playing field for women. I hope you'll join us.